My name is John Scott, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
I've been sober since December 19th, 1982, and for that I'm awful grateful. And thank you. And I told you, Mike, not to take very long. You cut into my time. I was thinking, he was talking about the Sunday morning spiritual speaker earlier this morning. L. Scott has got a really sick sense of humor, or this committee is very sick, one or the other. Me as a spiritual speaker is not too bright. It'd be like having my host, Mike, as a spiritual speaker. Mike is a very sick man. There he is. I can see him. Cindy and I and Mike had the fortune to run across each other at a conference one time. And I don't know if anybody else had any fun at that conference, but I know we just had a blast. They'd walk around and kind of go like this because we were just absolutely having a great time. I think that's what we're supposed to do here. We were in trouble, yeah. I think that's what we're supposed to do. It says in the book that we're not supposed to be a glum lot. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I think I was a glum a lot. I can remember, if you're new here and you've been offended because you're in Alcoholics Anonymous by some of these old guys, that's the way I was. I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and I was very offended because they were all laughing and having a good time. And obviously they weren't a drunk like I was. They might have had something else going on, but they weren't drunks, because they didn't hurt like I hurt. Nobody hurts like I hurt. You notice that? Have you ever had, the big problem, the one that's going to take you out, the biggest, it's just absolutely eating your lunch, it just consumes you, and you haven't got, you just know you're not going to make it. And some old guy comes by or some old gal comes by and talks to you for a few minutes, and you get past that one, and then a week later you have a new one that's just consuming you and just taking you over. That's the way I've lived most of my life in Alcoholics. That's the way I live most of my life, I guess. I'm absolutely shocked that I'm here. I really am. Cindy and I came here 15 years ago. The speakers at that conference was Clancy, was Johnny H., was Bob Zantz, Smitty was here, and Sharon. Sharon's going to be at our conference here in 3 weeks. Thank you. BeartoothMountainConference.com, it's just a wonderful, just wonderful. Probably the second best conference in the world. So if you get a chance, come see us, because we'd be awful glad to take care of you. But, I was just tipped over. Those people in my life are just absolutely giants. And I was here with Jim and Benoit. This is where the big guns come, and I'm going, wow, that's big stuff. And then 12 years ago, my wife got up here and she was invited to speak. And she got up here and with tears in her eyes after giving a halfway mediocre talk, she told everybody, and everybody here, God, everybody, that this was the worst year of her entire marriage, And I can remember sitting in the audience going, I remember sitting in the audience going, huh? Yeah. And that's why most of the people that I sponsor have this great big bald spot right here. I live most of my life not knowing what the heck's going on. I don't know how I can live like I live. I am with me. I'm here, But I don't know what's going on, I sit back and it's like it dawns on me that I've had this problem. And I don't know what the problem, it's like it's beginning to take shape in my head. And, this has been a problem for a while, I guess, now that I think about it. It's like, this has been going on for at least 3 or 4 days now. And the next thing you know, this has been going on for a long, long time. This is like a year. They have been mistreating me for over a year now. It's like, and it's my mind just takes me off and I go into la-la land. And before, when I was out there drinking, what had happened is I'd get so screwed up in the head, I'd have to have some drinks just to calm it down a little bit, to quiet down a little bit. The book says that my problem is centered in my mind, and they're not kidding. I mean, you know, I think Bill had it pretty good. I mean, it seems to me that my biggest problem is my thinking, and my and that's a hard one for us, because we know. I mean, we know. I've got this thing called the secret weapon, you know? I mean, not everybody's got it. I mean, you know, there's people out there, but I know things that aren't true and just love to believe in it, you know? I don't like a guy who's honest, you know, somebody to tell you the truth about what's going on with you. Don't like that. You know, even though I don't know, I hate it when people know more about me than I know, you know, especially, that's what I hated about us when we was out there drinking, you know, you wake up in the morning and then you gotta go ask them about what you did. And you don't know what you did, but you got to ask them in such a way that they don't know that you don't know. And that creates nerves. That makes life unbearable from time to time. And you don't want to ask her because she's going to tell you a bunch of crap that ain't true. You know that. And then you know what you did, you know, and it's like, come on, I didn't do nothing like that. And then finally somebody else would say, well, yeah, you did kind of. I just hated living like that. But, you know, for the longest time, I couldn't wait to just do it again, over and over and over again. That's what I did, one day at a time. And I didn't know that my mind was trying to kill me. I didn't know my mind thought that it could kill my body and still live. You know, and it's just it's an amazing deal. Those guys look like they're in a different meeting over there. Now I lost track. I got to start over again. You know, I want to thank the speakers. Really a great bunch of you guys did good. Just Dave last night. Night before last.
Don.
That's what I said. Don. And the rest of the speakers. Sterling, I guess he's already left, but he just really, he's someplace. No, I think he left. Anyway, he had to leave early. And he talked about, he finally figured out what his problem was, and it's like, it dawns on me, my name is John Robert Scott III. It's like, where's my country? I really enjoyed all you guys' talk. And Karen, I've heard, Karen's come up to Beartooth, and she's just a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And whenever you first moved to California, we was at the Mountain High Conference, and Jim says, that young lady there is going to be an excellent speaker one of these days. And I can remember that just like yesterday, you know. You did just such a great job, and I appreciate hearing you. And then this one over here, oh, my goodness. Susan just tore my heart out and put it on a platter. I mean, just, you know, you just did a great job. I mean, and that's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous from time to time. We just, here it is, you know, like it or don't like it. This is me. This is the way it is. Begin to be transparent in here. And boy, that's hard for us. We don't want to do that, you know, because we have I don't know about you guys, but I have a little job. It's called image management. I mean, I got to, you know, you're screwing up, and it's like you're gonna screw up, and you know you're gonna screw up, and you know there's nothing you can do to not screw up, and so you try to not screw up, and the harder you try not to screw up, the more you screw up. It's just, you know, and finally you get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and people start telling you, like I told you this morning, don't take yourself too serious. Well, if I don't, who will? You know, it's like, you know, it's like my sponsor Richard used to always say, you know, he says you're gonna have to lighten up. I said, I can't. I got all these problems. He said, I guess you do have a lot of problems. And, well, yeah, he's finally starting to catch on. I got a few problems. And he says, I guess if you don't worry about them, nobody else will. So you might as well worry about them, you know. And I'd think about that for a little bit, you know. I drank too much. That's how I got here. I didn't get here because I was doing something else. I was drinking a lot. I did a lot of dope. I played in a rock and roll band for 4 years. And you'll do a little. I know it's hard to believe. I had long hair and was thin one day. All the pictures have been burned, but I did. And well, that's how I met Cindy. I was playing one night. Yeah, I was playing one night, and this little gal in the audience, she come up here and she looked at me, and I'm playing my bass guitar and I'm doing my deal, and I look down. She's still looking at me. An hour later, I mean, I'm playing, and I look down there, and she's still looking at me. And so then I started looking at her, and then we take a break, and we go out and do some dope, do whatever he's doing, and come back, and she'd still be out there, you know. Finally, a day later, she tracked me down. I mean, we pulled up. A friend of mine was walking across the street, and I waved to him, and he waved back, and we pulled over. There's a carload of the guys from the band, and we pulled over, and he come running across the street, and behind him comes her. You know, it's like, you know, and she climbs in, and the next thing I know, you know, she had what I wanted. I was willing to do go to any lengths to get it, you know. Ask her how old she was, and she says, "Well, I'm about to be 18. My birthday is August 13th, and I'll be 18. So I thought, "Well, I says, all right, this will work," because I was, 19, 20 years old. And I hate to even say this in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like bad for here, you know, but about a year later, she told me she was somewhat younger than that. She was 12. She acted old for age. I couldn't believe it. She says, "I'm 12 years old," and when she said she was 12 years old, I decided to quit seeing her right away. That was it. You know? And I didn't come back to see her at least for, 6-8 days, something like that. But anyway, to make a long story short, we've been together ever since, and it has not been wonderful. Today is my day for revenge. I heard it the other day. Revenge is best served cold. You know? I figure 12 years is long enough. You know? Anyway, I hope you excuse me. I'm going to take this thing off. It's just, it's microwaving here behind me. You know, we just fell in love with each other. I mean, we just absolutely doted over each other. And we ended up getting married. And I quit playing rock and roll. I mean, I knew I was going to have to get married. And I decided what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have a family. I'm going to have to start providing a living for my family. And my dad is in the ranching business. And I went to work for him. And, you know, and we had a pretty good, you know, we loved each other. We did really well for a long, long time. But from time to time, and I mean, I know this doesn't happen in any other profession, but in the cowboy business, those guys drink a lot, you know. So what happened is, you know, little by little, I mean, it's kind of like the frog in the water thing, you know, with the boiling water. If you throw one in, it's boiling, he'll pop right back out. But if you turn up the heat and he's in there, that's kind of how alcoholism worked for me. And I got into a little bit of trouble from time to time. I mean, I've been thrown in jail, and I've had some problems. And I've gone to the doctors because of my bleeding ulcers and all that kind of stuff. And he said, if I was you, I'd quit drinking. And I decided I needed to get a second opinion, but I just never got around to it. And, you know, and I had plenty of preachers and priests and folks, good-meaning folks, all kinds of people tell me that I should quit drinking. And it's like, I didn't think that they understood what was going on. And obviously, later on, after I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't understand. Because for me, when I drank, it's like drinking was a solution in my life. It wasn't a problem. And whenever I was sober, it's like I'm going to be good. It's like a penalty. It's like a sentence. I have to be good for a while. So I really try not to drink, and it's like something would happen, and I'd have to drink again. And it got to where drinking really did start to cause some problems. I mean, I had some really close calls. I mean, I think anybody who's drank much has had a tremendous amount of. The trouble is, like I said, I don't know what's really going on inside. It's like I kind of live my life from a distance, even though I'm here. You know, it's like it doesn't sound right if you tell somebody else about this, but it's just the way it is for me. I don't feel like I'm connected to myself sometimes, you know, and I do things and I'm going, damn, that was really stupid. you know. But it's like I can't hardly wait to do it again, type of a thing. And I remember, you know, just several times getting in all kinds of trouble drinking and it's like, well, that don't want to ever happen again. And you know, some of them did and some of them didn't. But what was happening to Cindy and I is little by little we were just separating and didn't really realize that. I thought we were still having fun. It's kind of like her getting up and saying she's had the worst year of her marriage. I mean, it's like I was just dumbfounded whenever she started acting like she's going to leave me. And it's like, why? I give you the best years of my life. I mean, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you, you know? And I'd get drunk and she'd act weird. She got to where she didn't even like my friends, you know? And she really got kind of evil. And I would have my friends over and she would be upstairs. And this is some of the things that we did at the end. You know, and I'd have my bar was downstairs underneath the kitchen, which had a linoleum floor, and she'd get up there with a vacuum cleaner and vacuum that linoleum floor in the middle of the night, you know, and stuff like that. I had some friends over one night. It was about midnight. We was in the house drinking, and she had a washing machine running, she had the dryer running, she had the dishwasher running, and she had the vacuum cleaner going, and there was ladies down there. I mean, she could have come down there and visited, but she was working. She had to take care of the house. Nobody else is taking care of it, you know. And she's just, I mean, you talk about intense alcoholics, this lady was intense. And later on my sponsor asked me, you know, what did I do to make her like that? But I think she was born like that, seriously. I can remember coming home at night and, just, you know, and I tried to always be real quiet when I came home because, you know, she'd be sleeping. I wouldn't want to disturb her and stuff. And I can remember, well, I did. And I remember opening the door one night, you know, and I went to hang my coat up. And when I did, she came out of the closet over here with a broom and just got me in my belly real hard. And I bent over. Of course, I'm 3 sheets to the wind anyway. And so I'm down and she, boom, and I'm really down. And she went to tap dancing on my head with her cowboy boots. And it took me a while to figure out what happened, you know, because like I said, a lot of things happened to me and I don't know what's happening. You know, I had to have other people tell me, but I kind of vaguely remember this, you know, and so at least she didn't know about super glue. Thank God she didn't meet you. That's a terrible story. Anyway, but it got, you know, I mean, we laugh about it now, but it got to where I started to become an alcoholic in the final stages. And I didn't show up to work. I didn't show up in my marriage. I didn't show up in anything. All I did was drink. And I used to think that I was really I was so glad that I didn't hide booze and stuff like that. I sold a Suburban one time, you know, 4 years after I got sober, and when we detailed it, we found a fifth of whiskey rolling around underneath the seat. I didn't realize that I'd hid that thing, you know. I imagine there's a lot of them out there on that ranch still that I haven't found. But, you know, one day we was riding along, and one of the cowboys jumped off and started running around the bush and jumped into the bush, and here was another fifth of whiskey. You know, and I might have enough out there to start a liquor store. I don't know. But anyway, we got to where we really got to fighting each other a lot. It isn't so much what I was doing when I was drinking, it was what was going on inside of me when I was drinking. It was just tearing me apart because I knew I wasn't being a good father or a husband. I knew that I wasn't honest. I knew that I had lost my integrity. I knew that I had lost my ability to tell the truth. And all those things that I despised is like what I became. You know, and I got to where I was suicidal or homicidal. It just depended on which 5 seconds it was. You know, I had the mind of a newcomer. You know, it's like I ain't gonna make it. There's no way. You know, it's like, you know, my wife is leaving me. I just don't know what the heck I'm. You know, what am I gonna do? And then all of a sudden it dawns on me, my wife might stay. Now what the heck am I gonna do? It's like, you know, it's back and forth, And I can remember finally getting to the point of desperation where I was willing to do something. And this is how it came to me. A guy named Frank came out to visit me at the ranch. And it was noon. And Frank and I always drank a lot together. I mean, Frank was a good drinker. Me and him. One night, Frank and I got in this argument. And he called me opinionated for all. You know, I couldn't believe this guy called me opinionated. And so we argued about it till the sun came up. And I proved him wrong, too, by God. lost my pickup that night, had to go find it someplace, and I seem to do that sometimes quite regular. And I remember Frank come out there, and I said, "Hey, Frank, you know, glad to see you. It's noon. Let's have a drink." No, he says, "I'm not going to have a drink today." I says, "Well, all right." So anyway, I had a few drinks, and then after that, Frank wouldn't still drink. And I mean, I'm an obnoxious type of drunk. You know, if you don't want to have fun and play with me when we're drinking, I'm going to have fun and play with you while I'm drinking. You know, it doesn't matter. You know? So anyway, Frank was downstairs in the basement, and Cindy had already, you know, I didn't realize I was married to pre-Al-Anon. You know, my friends, I drank in two places. I drank in the Keg Bar, which is where all the ex-bikers and truck drivers and wannabes and has-beens drank, and I fit right in there. And then they had this other bar, kind of a fancy place where the guys that had ranches and farms and real estate people and lawyers and bankers, and that was at the Northern Hotel. And usually what I'd do is I'd start drinking at the Northern, and then I'd go to the Keg. Cindy would sit there, and she'd say, "Why are we at the Keg? You know, that's where all my friends are." You know, she'd always be against me and my friends, it seemed like, every time I turned around. And so anyway, Cindy decided one day that she's going to go to work. And I'd been down at the Keg Bar with all my advisors down there, and we were talking about we was in a state of depression or recession in Billings. And these guys, I mean, I got to laughing at her. She said she's going to go get herself a job. Well, ain't that cute? She's going to go find herself a job. And these guys, there's been guys out there that have been looking for a job for 6, 8, 10 months and haven't even found a job. She goes into town one day, has 3 jobs, and worked them all three, you know. That's the kind of woman I was married to. They constantly make you look bad all the time. Frank was over at the house, and of course, Cindy was working one of those 3 jobs that day, and I said to Frank, I mean, all afternoon, "Here, have a drink, here, have a drink." Frank said, "No, I'm not going to have a drink, I'm not going to have a drink. No, this is really wrong, because, I mean, there's something wrong with Frank." And I can remember just constantly after him. Finally, he said, "John, I'm not going to have a drink." He says, "I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Frank, you're going to what?" He says, "I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "My God, Frank, how come you go to Alcoholics Anonymous? You drink just like I do." And he says, "Yeah, I know." You know. and what he told me is that he was getting a divorce, and we was getting a divorce, and he says that he just got to a place where his life was upside down, and he needed to do something different, and he was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was helping him a little bit. And I said, "Well, can I come tonight?" I mean, he was talking about going to a meeting, and he says, "No." I says, "No." Well, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know nothing about it. You know, and I've had people come up after I get through talking, "Well, that ain't right." Well, that's what happened. You know, if you're really sensitive, I'll change my story for you. But anyway, he'd come up to me. He says, "I can't." He says, I can't take you tonight." And I says, "Well, why, Frank?" And he says, "Because Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who decided they want to quit drinking, and you don't want to quit drinking yet. Obviously, you're drinking right now." And so I can remember, and he did say, he says, "Now, if you want to quit drinking tomorrow, give me a call." But I can remember waking up that next morning going, "Oh, my God, this drinking is getting out of hand. I almost went to Alcoholics Anonymous last night." I have to watch this. It's getting a little Western now. So anyway, about 6 months later, you know, that pressure cooker, that thing that we go through, that great gift that we get if we're lucky, you know, I got to the point where I knew that I was going to blow my brains out. I knew that if I didn't blow my brains out, I was going to have some truck run over me. I knew that if that didn't happen, my body was just going to give up. I felt like I had maybe 6 months, maybe, on the outside. It's like I knew that deep down inside. I can remember waking up one morning in the basement, and it's like, you know, it's the same story over and over. I quit every single day. Every single day I quit. In the morning, I'm never going to do that again. This is it. I'm not going to do it again. And by noon, it's like that whole thing changed. And it's like, well, maybe I can have one. You know, it starts out, maybe I'll have one in 6 months. You know, and another 5 minutes go by. Well, maybe I'll have one in a year, you know, or whatever. And it just keeps, then pretty quick, what the heck, you know. And it wasn't like I was powerless. I always thought that you'd have to go to the bar with a little foam running out of your mouth and just shaking and rattling and rolling and say, you know, give me a drink right now or else I'm going to, you know, blow up or something. You know, what I always did is I just went to the bar and said, two at a time and keep them coming. That was my deal. Fact is, most of the time when I walked into the bar that I was walking in, it didn't matter whether it was the keg or the northern, it didn't make any difference. They just saw me and they fixed them two at a time and kept them coming. Because I was good for business, I thought. And I can remember, you know, waking up that morning, it's like, God, dang, here I've gone again. I'm paycheck spent, you know, and I'm already financially just sunk. And my marriage is crap, and I'm working for my dad, and he's talking about firing me. I mean, that's, you know, that's bad. He should have fired me. I wasn't doing nothing, you know. My mom, a couple of days earlier, I'd snuck down to the mailbox. I hated to go in the mailbox. I didn't answer my phone. I didn't answer my door, and I just hated to go. But down, we lived in the country, little row of mailboxes there, and I went down there and I saw my mom by accident. You know, and she says, "How you doing?" I said, "I hate God, hate everybody, hate Cindy. I'm going to kill Cindy. You know." And she said, "I said, you know, somebody broke in my house, stole all my guns." And she, you just see her just kind of do that. And she says, "Well, your dad and I are the ones who went in there and took those guns." "Oh, what the heck? What do you do that for?" And she says, "Because we're afraid. We're afraid you're going to kill somebody." "Well, Mom, if I'm going to kill somebody, by God, I'm going to use this one." You know, and it's like, you know. Now, I'm not, don't even think a little bit that I'm a tough guy, because I am not. I'm just stupid at this point. I mean, I'm just crazy. I'm out of my mind. I really was. I mean, I had gotten to the place where I was beginning to think of what I had to do. I mean, I knew I was going to have to kill myself, but it made a lot of sense to kill her because it's her fault. You know, it really was. I mean, if she'd have been this or that, just a little, my life would have been. And then what would those kids think? Those kids, those poor kids. Dad killed Mom. Kids got to go too. And I mean, that start. I really. We laugh, but it wasn't funny. I really got to thinking about it. You know what scared me about it is I did more than think about it. I started to dwell on it. And it's like, it just scared me. And there's a doctor in Billings not too many years ago that did exactly that thing. And they said the alcohol might have been involved. Yeah, right. You know, that's one thing that my sponsor said. He says, you know, once you come in here, a lot of things are going to make a lot more sense to you than they used to, you know. He robbed the 7-Eleven store and then drove through the front window. Yeah, alcohol may have been involved. Yeah. So anyway, I can remember telling Cindy that, Cindy had one of those jobs that she had that day, the day before I got sober. I had promised her that it was right before Christmas, and I had promised her that I wouldn't mess it up, that I wouldn't get drunk that day. And it was early in the morning. It's still pretty early in the morning. Me and this guy, we woke up in this house, in this basement, and I told him, I says, "Look, I have got to go. I have got to go see Frank. Frank's the only guy I know who's in AA, and I've got to go talk to him about what's going on." And this other guy says, "Yeah, I'm through. I've headed." And so we drove over to Frank's, and Frank was so tickled to see us. I mean, he really was. And I was going to do this. I was going to bring the 20 questions. You know, you guys seen the 20 questions, and nobody could pass them. I mean, it's obvious. With the name like Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys had to come up with something like 20 questions to get some sucker like me to come in. You know, and I can remember looking at the 20 questions and trying to pass the test. And you know how it goes. You know, if you answer one, you might be two. You probably are, and three, you're just sunk. You know, I mean, I cheated, and I got like 15 of them wrong. You know, and he was so glad to see us, and he talked to me and this other guy named Johnny, and he was talking about, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has done us so much good and this and that. Well, Johnny and I, you know, we were the kind that gets nervous, and I'd been drinking for, you know, probably a week, 2 weeks at that point, and so I really get nervous whenever I quit doing that. And we'd already got us a case of beer, and we were drinking on this beer, and we was talking to Frank and asking him, you know, if he would take us to a meeting that night, and he says, "Well, no, I won't." Why not? "Well, because you're drinking." He says, "Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who quit drinking. Obviously, you don't want to quit drinking yet." But he says, "I'll tell you what, you don't drink." He says, "Drink all you want to today, but tomorrow, don't drink." And he says, "If you don't drink tomorrow," he says, "I'll take you to a meeting." So I said, "All right." So anyway, we went to the keg bar, me and this Johnny, and we drove over to the keg bar. And you realize that at 8:30 in the morning, there's not a single person in that keg bar that could pass the 20 questions test? Not one. Well, a bartender, two other guys, and me and Johnny. And none of us could pass the test. And you know, and I got the secret weapon working now. And so I know what the deal is. See, the deal is I'm gonna go in and join Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys just take advantage of poor people who are just having a little down on their luck. And what you're gonna do, you got us roped in there, and then you're gonna start charging us $25-$50 a month for the rest of our lives. I mean that's how it works, you know. I mean, that's obviously, I just knew, you know. I don't need any reason to know that. I just know that. And so anyway, you know, we were all trying to take that test, and then later on through the day, there'd be other people come in there and try to take the test, and then other people come in who are ex-members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they start explaining the program to you and all that kind of stuff. And I always only remember that last day about how much fun I had that last day. I would sit over in this corner by myself and cry because I was alone. And then you would come over and you'd say, John, can I sit down and visit with you? Get the hell out, you know, and then I'm ready to fight you. Like I could do it, you know, like I could even stand up. And then you'd leave, and then I'd be over there crying because that's the good days. You know, we just kind of miss that time, don't we? You know, and so anyway, I can remember I went home that night, and the next day, Frank called Cindy up and says, don't let him drink. And Cindy, the night before, I'd called her up, and I'd said, Cindy, guess what? I know I've let you down. I know that I'm not going to be able to make it to the Christmas party because I'm drunk again, but I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, well, good for you. And so the next morning, Frank calls her up and says, don't let him drink. And she says, I couldn't do that even if I wanted to. And she hung up on it. You know, she didn't like any of us. And I remember going to that meeting that night, they wanted me to meet over at the restaurant across the street from the meeting place, and Frank says, I want you to meet my sponsor. His name is Richard. Richard was a used car salesman, had a bad back, so he was always sitting up real straight and had wingtip shoes on, just immaculate suit, three-piece suit and all that. And he'd sit up real straight and smoke cigarettes just constantly. I mean, just constantly. And he was nervous. And he asked me a question. He says, do you feel like you're responsible for your own actions? And you know, and I got this mind that's going, you know, and I'm going, you know, this is an elite group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to have the right answer, and I don't know, you know, if I answer wrong, they probably won't let me in. And anyway, after about 2 seconds, which seemed like a lifetime, I go, yeah. He says, good. Maybe now you start acting like it. I didn't know how he knew. I figured that he'd been talking to Frank, he'd been talking to Cindy. You know, had the deal. You know, he had inside information, obviously. But he started to talk to me about his life and about what had happened to him and about how he felt and about how Alcoholics Anonymous had taken him out of the pit and put him to where he was today. And I could hear that. You can hear that. That's that language of the heart. That's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And something happens when we do that. And I was able to hear him. And he was rough and he was tough. And he didn't screw around. He told you the way it was. You know, and I didn't like him. You know, I didn't like him. And so anyway, we went on to the meeting that night, and there's another gal there. It was the first time she raised her hand, and I raised my hand, new guys. And I never seen her again. And how come I'm still here and she's not? I have no idea. Who knows? It isn't because of God's grace, because we all got the same amount. You know, we just do. I think that some of us accept it and some of us don't. I think some of us can hear the music and some of us are deaf. You know, can't hear, doing here. So I can remember that first night. And I don't remember what they said. I don't remember much of anything. I remember what they did and how they acted. I remember for the first time in a long time I picked up a little degree of hope. And that hope, that little spark, gave me enough energy to get back the next night. And I said, and I can remember, and I was, the first night I was there, this guy named Johnny says, I'm going to be your sponsor. I figured that the sponsor was the guy that you're going to pay the $50 to, you know. And he says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he says, I'll tell you what you're going to do. He says, tonight when the meeting's over, you're going to come over to my house. So I went over to his house, and at 2 o'clock, he says, it's time for you to go home. Now, 2 o'clock in Montana, the bar's closed. So he sends me home. So I drive out in the country where I live, you know, about 35 miles or so, and I get out there. the next morning, one of them guys calls me and says, come in. So I go into town, and Johnny had this auctioneer place. So I go over to his place, and about noon, two drunks from the group show up, and they take me, we go eat, and the next thing you know, two more show up, and they're running shifts on me, you know, and they did that for a couple of days, and they had, you know, I was nervous. I don't know about you guys when you guys quit, but I was nervous, and I was rocking and rolling and foaming at the mouth, and they fixed this. They said, we got something for you. And they fixed this orange juice and this K-roll syrup and some vitamins and honey and stuff and blended it up in a big old blender, made a big jug of it, like put it in a milk bucket, you know, and here, drink this. It'll make you feel better. And it didn't. I just told them, I feel a lot better, you know. Thank you very much. I don't think I want any more, you know. And so it started. And I've never had another drink of alcohol since the day I walked, or anything else, since the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous feeling like I was a pretty pure alcoholic. You know, years before when I was in the rock and roll band, I did every kind of thing that you can do. But I'd quit that, you know, long time ago, and 10 years, and I was a pure alcoholic. And as long as you didn't count the little white pills with the crosses on them that kept you from falling asleep, you know. And I always hated that whenever you go into those blackouts, so at least that kind of helped a little bit. And I took, you know, that by a handful, but that didn't count. And I can remember going to those first few meetings, and just like you, it takes you, if you're new here, it takes 6-7 months just to learn what the heck we're talking about, you know? Like sobriety. Sobriety was a word that was really foreign to me. This is what sobriety meant to me. It meant not drinking for the rest of my life, but having to stay sober. It's like not drinking for the rest of my life and hating it. That's what sobriety meant. And that's not what we're selling here. That's not what this is about. Sobriety is about living the rest of your life comfortable in your own skin, not even needing a drink. And I didn't realize that. I thought that there was, you know, for the longest time when I went to AA meetings, I thought that they were going to the secret meetings, and they wouldn't let me in yet. I hadn't paid my dues or whatever. You know, it's like what I always hated was people who come in after you that are doing so much better than you are. You know, I do have this ego problem. I did mention that, didn't I? It's like, God damn, how come they, and my sponsor, Johnny, who is my sponsor for a few days, and he had a little problem. His sponsor was not doing it right, and then the group wasn't doing it right, and then next thing you know, he was drunk. And that was after 7 years of sobriety. And he taught me a great lesson. You know, the time's important, but you better not think that that's the answer, because it's not the answer. It seems to be what you do here that counts, not what you know. And he knew a lot. And I find myself, you know, I didn't really get to ask my sponsor to be my sponsor at that time. And so I decided, you know, tonight my sponsor's out drinking, so tonight I'm going to ask the one that I really wanted. And that's little blonde. It's this cute little blonde. It's, you know, and I was going to go ask. And out of nowhere comes this Richard. He says, I hear that your sponsor's calling. I says, yeah, that's what I hear. He says, well, I'm going to be your sponsor now, John. And I says, well, Richard, I don't know if I really want you to be my sponsor. He says, oh, I didn't ask you if you wanted me to be your sponsor. He says, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he always knew what I wanted. You know, a couple of days later, he sold me a diesel car. He knew I wanted it. You know, but he did have the ability to somehow get past me, you know. And he'd talk to me in ways that I would understand, which wasn't really very pretty, most of it. And he said that, you know, maybe for the first time in your life, you ought to let somebody else run your life, because so far up until now, you haven't done a very good job. And he says, the evidence is in that you don't know what the heck you're doing. So he says, shut up and listen, that kind of stuff, you know. And I was really a sensitive newcomer, and I just didn't really buy into that stuff very much, because I had kind of been bullied all my life. You know how you get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of a sudden it's dawned on you how you've been just pushed around all your life? You know, nobody else sees that, just us, you know. And right after we just got sober just for a little bit, Cindy and I, we didn't like each other very much. We didn't hardly talk to each other. And Richard, one of the things that Richard says is, how's your marriage going? Well, I know he's been talking to Frank. It's no sense in lying to him. And so I told him, well, I'm getting a divorce. And he says, now, wait a minute. Are you getting a divorce? And I said, yeah, I'm getting a divorce. She's a crazy woman. And he says, hey, buddy, anybody live with you as long as she did, she's got to be plumb out of her mind. You know, and he says, I'll tell you what. He says, you're not going to get a divorce. He says, if you're the one that's getting a divorce, you'll quit right now. I said, Frank, you don't understand. She's out of her stinking mind. I told him about the time that I was trying to sleep because I had this hangover, and she was outside banging on the window because some birds were flying around building these nests up underneath the rafters. And I've been, like I said, I've been thinking about how I was going to wipe her out. And I got my double-barrel shotgun out, and I walked around the corner. And she's out there right at my bedroom bed, you know, bang, bang, yeah, yeah, you know. And I pulled that gun right up on her. And she looks around at me, and she throws the broom down, and she looks at me like this and says, well, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot her, get the hell out of the way. You know, and I, you know, and you know, and he says, heck yeah, she's just doing what she's supposed to do. He says, what you're going to do is, he says, we don't know whether or not your marriage is going to work. He says, it has nothing to do with anything. But he says, she's there, and you don't know how to have a relationship, so we're going to start with what you have. And so don't get a divorce. And he'd give me those kind of directions just constantly, you know. And that home group of mine, there were so many goofy people in that home group, you know. There was a little old gal, her name was Millie. And Millie was like a grandmother type, and she would sit in the same chair, and it's just pathetic. I mean, she'd sit there, and she'd look at all the miracles. And it's like, I don't see nothing like that. I don't even see people I like yet. And then there's this other gal they'd call on every once in a while. Her name was Margaret, and Margaret sits there and says, them that go to meetings, stay sober. Them that don't. Thank you very much. You call Margaret 10 years from now, she'll say, hi, my name is Margaret, and them that go to meetings, stay sober, and them that don't. God, what? I mean, come on. No. And then there's this guy named Nick, and Nick was a little short guy with a real high voice who knew what he was doing. Later on, I found out. But Nick would sit there and say, well, if you're new in this group and you've got less than 6 months, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever for me to remember your name. and then there's a guy named Rotten Ralph who was an attorney. And Rotten Ralph's favorite deal is he'd be sitting there talking, and when he would talk, if you was a new guy and if you had talked before, like say you said something bad about your wife not treating you right, he would just sit there and just home in on how self-centered and egotistical and what a knothead and how stupid and all this stuff. And then after he gets through, he'd say, now, if I made you thirsty, here's a dollar for your first drink. You know? And yeah, it's not right. It's not right. It's not the way. It's not the way you should. I'm with you. Okay. Now, I don't want you to think I had a bad attitude or anything, but there's this guy named Gerald who was he was from Louisiana, I believe, and he was up there because he'd got stopped and stuck in a nut house in Montana for a while. He'd gotten out for a few years, and you know, he wasn't hitting on all cylinders, and he was the kind of guy that if he got called on 5 minutes after the meeting started, you knew who was going to be talking at the end of the meeting. He was the kind of guy, if he got called on at the end of the meeting, you knew that the meeting was going to go an extra hour. I mean, that's just like, God, Gerald's here tonight. People would leave, you know. It's no, no. Because they always called on him, you know. They don't know who to call on. They always call on the wrong guy. And Gerald would come up to me and ask me how I was doing. And I'd tell him how I was doing. And the way I'd tell him, I was, you know, hate everything. Hate God. I'm going to kill my wife one of these days, I think. And, you know, this kind of stuff. And so he says, John, he says, from now on, when I come up to you and ask you how you're doing, you're going to look at me in the eye and you're going to shake my hand and you're going to say, why, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. And that, you know, that's just not right. You know, and I mean, it's an honesty program and they got me lying, you know. And so I remember sitting there one night, you know, I'm looking at this old Nick and I'm thinking, you know, Nick, I don't know, I'm sure that you guys have never done this, but the old timer who's just kind of rubbed you wrong and you're going to get even with him kind of a deal. Nick's going to know my name before this meeting's over tonight. So the meeting gets up, and there's about 10, 15 people around the room still talking, you know, to each other. And I go up to Nick, and I give him my best dog and pony show about how I've been mistreated all my life and how my wife has treated me, and she's driving me crazy, and I can't stand. And he just, in the middle of one of these sentences, he jumps up and he says, so you're an alcoholic. Now what are you going to do about it? You know, and it's like I look around, and there's people looking at me now, and it's like, oh, my God, you know. And I said, I'm quitting Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm out of here. And I can remember going to the door, and there's this refrigerator right by the door, and he's a crippled guy. And he just kind of like this. Well, he beats me in the refrigerator, and he throws me up against the refrigerator with that old three-finger push, and he says, listen, he says, you're wasting my time, you're wasting their time, and you're damn sure wasting your time. Why don't you just get the hell out of here and get drunk? That's what you're trying to do. And out of nowhere is rotting around with his daughter. Yeah, let me buy your first drink. Let me buy your first drink. It's like, and all they talk about is love and tolerance is our code, you know, just give me a break. And I remember screaming at him, and I run out and I get in this diesel car that my sponsor just sold me that I really wanted. And he said, you know, I'm gonna speed out through this gravel parking lot, and I remember driving home, and I'm beating on the dash, and sons of bitches, it's like, I just, you know, have you guys ever, you have, I know you have, just absolutely insane. It's like, what do these people want from me, you know, and thank God I had to drive 30 miles, because something happened to me along the way, something happened to me. It's like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's like, I could hear what he was saying, so I'm an alcoholic. What am I going to do about it? I mean, am I going to keep being stupid for the rest? I mean, an idiot for the rest of my life? Because that's what I was being, and immature. You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to finally address my problems, or am I going to just hide? You know, if you ever admit you're a real alcoholic, we have a real answer. Oh, I'd rather be insane. I like the insane better. At least that way you can go to the nut house and they give you a little, you know, and then eventually you get out and drink again. But if you're an alcoholic, these guys got an answer for that. And I knew they had an answer for that. And it began to dawn on me that maybe if I really wanted to, I could get out of this insanity. And I can remember the next night getting in the car, you know, my diesel car, my brand new used diesel car, one I really wanted. And driving to town, and I'm like, God, I got to see Nick. I got to see Rotten Ralph and give him back his dollar. Got to see Millie and all the wonderful miracles. And Gerald. Well, hello, Gerald. Yes, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much, Gerald. And it just hit me. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I was, in spite of myself. Things were changing, you know, and so what kind of started? That's kind of how it started for me. And like for the first time in my life, I was able to hear somebody else in my life. And for the first time in my life, there was something outside of me that was starting to point me in a direction that I needed to go. And I don't know whether it's a sponsor or whether it's a group or whether it's God himself or all of it combined, but I know that there was a power that's starting to move me in the direction that I needed to go. And things were changing. And things change really fast in Alcoholics Anonymous once you start allowing it. And that's kind of a trap, too, because I can remember after being here for a little while going, I think I've made too big of a deal out of this. You know, truth of the matter is I haven't had much trouble at all stopping drinking. It's just this stinking thinking that's driving me crazy. And then you read it in the book, it says our mind seems to be our main problem. Our problem is centered in our mind. So, and that's what AA seems to work on. It's not, you know, AA doesn't work on the drinking part. It works on the thinking part. And that's what a sponsor is for. And that's why sponsorship is so important to me and the people around me. And the people who seem to do well in Alcoholics Anonymous are the people who have sponsors and who are accountable to them and who are accountable to a home group and who are trying to bring other people into that circle. Constantly trying to bring other people into that circle, because those are the thing. That's the thing that makes me feel better about me than anything else. I tell you what, if you haven't been there, the most fantastic thing that happens to people in Alcoholics Anonymous is when you're working with a new guy or a new gal and those lights come on. You can just see it. It's like, yeah, you know, maybe now they get to stay. You know, now maybe they'll start carrying this message to somebody else. Now maybe we'll make some progress, because of myself and by myself, I simply self-destruct. I see people in Alcoholics Anonymous who've been here for 15, 20 years, and it's like, you know, it's just painful. Just painful. Do you sponsor anybody? No, I ain't got time for that. Well, I got something else. So you ain't going to have time to stay sober here pretty quick, you know. Well, if I had to do the things that you do when I got sober, I wouldn't have made it. Well, what the heck makes you think you made it now? You know. The moment you think you got this deal, I got news for you. It's probably slipping away. Have you ever noticed the times that you just know that you ain't got it, that you're not going to make it? It just fits together. It's that knowing that we fight, that thinking that we got the deal. You got the deal. You better be careful. You better be careful. This thing is slippery. This disease that we have, it says it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's dang sure patient too. It'll wait for you. You know, I don't have to worry about this. I don't have to do that. I love what your sponsor says. Stay away from the don't have to people. You know, my sponsor Richard used to say, you know, you better. She says there's all kinds of sobriety out there. You get to pick the one you want. He says you be dang careful what you pick, because your life depends on that decision. And so I found myself after a couple of years, Richard left. He went back to California. You know, Cindy and I was having a lot of troubles with our marriage, and he says, you know, he says, like I said, you're not going to get a divorce, and what you're going to start doing is you're going to go out to that ranch and you're going to tell her that you love her. God damn, now they're making me lie again. And he says, not only, but he says, for you, you're a liar, and everybody knows it, including her. He says, so what you get to do is you get to show her in some small way what it is, how you can love her. And of course, my ears went right up right away, you know. And he says, no, it's not what you're thinking. He says, what you're going to get to do is you're going to get to carry out the garbage. You're going to have to do the dishes. You're going to have to make a bed. You're going to have to clean up after yourself. He says, you're going to have to treat her with kindness. And it doesn't matter whether you're in public or in private. You're going to treat her with grace and dignity, because that's what she loves. That's what she deserves. And he says, and you're going to start treating her like you love her. He says, because you say it, but you don't take any actions to show it. He says, what we're going to start doing is working on the actions. He says, we don't know whether she's going to stay or not, but he says, you need to practice, because you've never practiced it before. And about that time, me and Nick started talking again. And Nick says, he says to me, he says, you know, he says, he's overhearing this conversation. He says, you know, John, he says, you got a lot of good left in you. You know why I know that? I said, why do you know that, Nick? He says, I'm going to tell you why. He says, all of us was born with the same amount, and you haven't used any of yours yet. they just didn't know that I was a sensitive alcoholic, you know. I got to tell you something. For a guy like me with an ego like mine, if I didn't have people like that in my home group, I don't know if I'd have made it. If I had somebody coming back behind me and pat me on the butt, I just don't know. I might have. I don't know. I really don't know. that's what happened to me. Those are the kind of people that I got sober with. And within 2 years, almost all those people were gone. Within 2 years, they were all, I mean, Nick had died. There was a guy named Old Tom that was there, and he'd always say, I'm Old Tom, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And I'd, oh, man, give me a break. You know, grateful alcoholic. Grateful for what? You know, and he's still around, but all the rest of them, they're gone. They're all dead or they moved away. And I was so fortunate to be there at that time, at that place with those people. Because within a short period of time, Richard started following some of the advice he told me to tell. He was in Montana because he was teaching his wife a lesson. And I don't know how that worked out, but I know they got back together before he died. He died of lung cancer. And 2 years of sobriety. I don't know about you guys, but 2 years I kind of peaked out. It's like I knew more about Alcoholics Anonymous than anybody, and I've never known that much since. You know, and it's like... About that time is when Richard left, and you know, you don't really need a sponsor at 2 years if you got the secret weapon in. I can remember, for the longest time using the group for a sponsor. You know, and that's kind of handy, especially if you want to die by the installment plan, because you always, it's like Clancy says, you always find somebody sick enough to say, yeah, you can do that. And that's all I need. I mean, I can talk to 20 old timers and they go, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Talk to one new guy who's been there for about 45 seconds. Oh, I think you can do it. Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, and so I bought a small farm. And within a short period of time, I was $3 million in debt with no visible means of support. Cindy and I had kind of gotten back together a little bit, and I found myself just absolutely crazy. I mean, I was uh, I was uh, my marriage was not wonderful by any means, and my financial situation was absolutely crap. The bank wouldn't even let me in the bank anymore because I was going through this little problem. They wanted their money back, and they sent me over in this what we call the dire pen, is where all the people that was in financial trouble had to go to a building, you know, a couple of blocks down, so we wasn't seen in the main building, and I can remember, you know, going through a long period of time there, about three, four years there, where I was just financially broke. I mean, I was messed up bad. And the trouble with a guy like me, the way you get my attention is you don't even have to touch my pocketbook. All you got to do is tap it, you know, because I have so much of my image management is attached to my pocketbook. So, you know, if I got money, then I'm okay. If I don't got money, I'm screwed. Well, I was screwed for a long time, you know, and what happened to me during those years, they began to be the best years of my life when I look back. See, that's the thing about me and my life. I don't know. I live with myself, but I don't know what's going on. And when I look back, I see how fantastic the trip was. You know, how great that time was. You know, I threw my, after a couple of years of doing it all myself, my way, I found myself, thinking about blowing my brains out again. And my sponsor's gone. I don't have a sponsor. I'm using the group. And finally, I went and talked to a guy who I knew would tell me the truth. You know, I hate those guys. And he said, I'll tell you what, John. He says, how many meetings are you going to now? And I'd kind of pretty well quit Alcoholics by that time. I was going to about, I told him one or two a week, and I lied. I was going like more. For me, in my language, when I really tell you that means like two a month maybe. You know, and he says, how many people are you sponsoring? And I told him I was sponsoring two, but really it was only one. And he was so crazy, he didn't even know I sponsored none. And he says, I'll tell you what I want you to do. He says, I want you to start going to 15 meetings a week. You can do that here in Billings. And he says, I want you to start picking up every loose stray dog that you can find. He says, I want you to sponsor everything that looks like he might want to be sponsored. So I started that. And it was really, you want to talk about a blessing. You want to talk about there comes a day that the only defense is going to be if my spiritual house is in order. Within a few months after that, I had started sponsoring some people. I was working. I was going to meetings. I was trying to do the best that I had finally quit worrying about me and my finances because he asked me. He says, how's your finances? And I told him I'm going to broke. He says, who's been working on it? Who's been working on your finances? I said, I have. He says, why don't you quit that? You know, it'd be a good idea if you just quit it and just sit back and see what happens. And I can remember... When I kind of surrendered that deal, I was able to put together a deal that really helped me out. It got me out of debt, what it did. And I can remember coming back to town. I was out of town, and I came back. I was driving, and I was driving along the road, and I was listening to Clancy on the tape. I'd been to a meeting the night before. I talked to several of the guys that I sponsored that morning, and it's like my mind says, you deserve a drink. I was 4 years and about a month. And my other mind goes, yeah. Usually there's some kind of argument. There's no argument. He just says, yeah. You know, we talk about being a Gemini today. And it's like, I always thought that was part of the deal. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. But the thing is that I just decided I was going to have a drink. And I tell you, I think if I hadn't gone back to meetings, if I hadn't been working with the people that I was working with, if I hadn't been listening to the Clancy tape or some tape, you know, chances are really high that I would have drank. You know, and that's just the ones I know about. You know, no telling how many countless other times that I don't even know about. Because, like I said, I don't know about me. I don't know what's going on inside of me. And I find myself going to the meeting that night just absolutely shaking and broken. Because it dawned on me, after I was only in AA for 4 years and a month, it's like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I'm the alcoholic who, even when I don't want to, even after I've done all the things that we're supposed to do, this insanity comes over me. And the guy inside says, yeah, let's have a drink. Little guy inside of me, it seems like. I mean, this is the way I look at it. And he's always back there going, yeah, but this time it's different. You know, she really has screwed you over all your life. You know, they don't really like you down there at that group. I know you started it, but you didn't do it right. You know, if your sponsor really loved you, he would, you know, just stop, you know. And what usually we do is, you know, we push it away because we know better. But every once in a while, one of them guys get in there and you start to really think about it, you know. And the worst thing I can do at a time, like, you know, a guy, I was 11 years sober, and a guy calls me up, a guy I used to party with a lot. He says, let's go down and have a drink. I says, no, I don't drink anymore. Oh, he says, I remember you was on the wagon, but shoot, that's been what, 8, 9 years? It's been 11 years, 14 days, you know. And I didn't know, it's 11 years. He says, oh, heck, you've been on the wagon long enough. And I go, well, no, I haven't. Thank you very much, you know. But at about that period of time, I was sponsoring this guy. And this guy was a rich guy. You know, a guy had a lot of money. He spent some winters down in like Acapulco or someplace, you know. Had all this money. It's just great. But he'd been sober for 10 years, and then he'd gone out and got drunk for about 5 years. And now he's trying to get sober again for about 5 days. You know, it wasn't very long, a couple of months maybe. And he'd asked me to sponsor him, and he called me up this morning. And at this time, I was running a store for my sister because she had gone through this bankruptcy, and she was losing the store. And I don't know whether I stepped forward or the family asked me, but anyway, I was running this thing. And when she had it, it was going about like that. And whenever I got it, it went like that, you know. And it's just going straight down. And it wasn't working. And my sister was very depressed. She was losing her business and stuff, and I was trying to help. And I got on the phone to this guy right after I just talked to my sister, and I told her, look, I'll take you out to eat. I'll take you out to eat tonight or this afternoon. And would you like that? And she, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Because she's just crippled emotionally. And so anyway, then the next phone call was this guy, this rich guy that I sponsored. And he says he's firing me. And the reason he was firing me, he went into this great big old huge story about why he was firing me, about how he was doing too much and he was, you know, going to all these meetings and he really didn't need to do that. And he was really a good salesman. I mean, I'm listening to him pre-cook and going, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah. You know, and hung up the phone. I kind of just, you know, how you go along, you just bump along through the day, you think about it over and over again. And my sister, I picked her up and we was going out to eat, and I told her, you know, Maggie, I think I might have overcorrected with this Alcoholics Anonymous business. You know, I think that, you know, based on what I know now and how things are, and Cindy and I get along pretty good now, and this business is going pretty well and stuff. I mean, your business is not, but mine is. I think that maybe I didn't drink that much. And she started laughing. Now, Maggie hadn't laughed in months, you know. And she started laughing, and she gets down, and she says, get me to the gas station right now, you know. And so I pulled in the gas station. She runs in the bathroom. Pretty quick, she comes back. She's still laughing. I said, what the hell's so damn funny? She says, God, you are crazy, aren't you? I said, what are you talking about? And she says, John, don't you remember? She says, the last 3.5 years you drank, you never drew a sober breath in the whole time. And I don't remember that. I just remember occasionally having a series of bad luck, you know. And so I told her, I said, well, I guess I might as well go back to a meeting tonight, you know. And that's just kind of how that thing works, you know. It's just, you just think you know, but you don't know. The minute you think you know, you might be in trouble. You better be paying attention. This thing is slippery. Doesn't mean that we live in fear. No. But it doesn't mean that you're stupid either. You know, you pay attention to what's going on. And it's not hard to do. It's hard if you want to get drunk. This is a terrible place if you're not through drinking, I think. Seems like for people that have gone through it, you know. Got to talk a little bit about Jim being my sponsor. After that, right about in that period of time, I was having just a terrible time. Cindy was doing a lot of things really wrong. And I had to do this inventory that he hadn't asked for yet, but I knew he was going to, so I just went ahead and did it. And I wrote this inventory out, about 4-page inventory, and I remember sending the UPS overnight delivery. And I called him up the next morning and told him I was getting rid of her. I was sick and tired of this crap, and I didn't want, you know, and my days were just terrible, and everything was upside down. And I'm serious this time, too, you know. And well, Johnny says, I can see you're serious. He says, but we're not going to do anything just yet. And I says, and my days are just terrible, and I can't stand it, and I hate AA, and I hate God, and I hate this whole business. He says, I'll tell you what you're going to do. He says, tonight when you go to sleep, you're going to say to God, thank you for a day. And in the morning when you wake up, you're going to ask him to help you through the next day. And he says, and you're going to go to work. He says, when you get through working, you're going to go to an AA meeting. He says, oh, and by the way, when you get to that AA meeting, you're going to tell them how great today has been. Oh, geez, anyway, I did it, you know, because I just do it because I have learned the value of doing what they asked me to do. And I remember going through the day thinking, you know, there ain't a damn thing happening today that's anything worth being grateful for, you know. But then I'm in a trap, you know, because I got to do it. So I'm starting to look for this and that. And, you know, and by the time I got to the meeting, I was having the time of my life. Now, that's how this ironclad trap of mine works, you know. I don't know. I mean, if you think about that, if that's all it takes for me to change this attitude from bad to good, it's just as easily changed from good to bad. So what I get to do is I think I get to stay in here. We're like prize fighters, you and I. We got to watch it because we're going to have a fight. There's a fight coming. It's coming. I guarantee you. And if it's been here with you, it's going to come again. It's coming. We have to stay in shape. Except we're not like the prize fighter. He knows the date. We don't know the date. We don't know the time. But we know it's coming. And we have to stay in shape. And it's not physical shape that we have to stay in. It's that spiritual shape. We have to make sure that we are doing the things necessary to stay in the middle when that time comes. Because it will come. It says in the book, it guarantees it. And I know in my experience, it's happened. It's happened more than once. And thank God for people, those trainers, those coaches that we have, that have kept us on the line. You know, and they're important. Our sponsors are important. When Jim was dying, one of the guys that I sponsored financed me because that was one of those great times that I was broke again. And we went down, Sydney and I, and he went down and we seeing Jim. And we knew it was over. And Jim says, no, he says, you and me in the back room. And I didn't know whether I was going to get chewed out or what. But anyway, we went back there. And he says, you know, I've been thinking. He says, you need to get yourself a sponsor. He says, because I ain't going to be around long. He says, no, I'm not. And I've been thinking. And he was pretty heavily medicated at the time. And he's sitting on the side of the bed, and I'm sitting over there with him. And he says, Jim. Because my head's going like, you know, from one extreme in the Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, there's 40,000 different people out there that I'm going and he says, okay. He says, yeah. He says, well, I've been thinking about your situation, and he says, I believe that you need to, ask this guy for you. I said, Jim, and Jim goes, oh, yeah. He says, ask the old Martin. You know, ask him. He'll be good for you. You know, so I went and asked old Martin. You know, and I said, well, Dick, here's my history. My first sponsor, he's died from lung cancer. My second sponsor, he's died from lung cancer. Will you sponsor me? He says, good God, Scott, you're a carrier. What an order. I don't think I can go through with it. You know, but when we was here the next day, you know, I mean, Jim was just down. Remember, he just broke your heart. And it was his 30th birthday. And Hodges and Clancy and Byron came over to celebrate his 30th birthday. They had their dinner. And we got to help fix that. And Jim was sitting in his chair, and his tie was down, and his coat was off. And he looked out the window, and Clancy drove up. And Jim you just see the change. It just, bam. He gets up. He straightens up his tie. He throws his coat on. He says, my sponsor's here. And it's not who his sponsor was. It's who he made his sponsor to be. And that's the way it is. It's not who your sponsor is. Instead of having the sponsor, why don't you start being the sponsee? What a deal. And if it's left up to me, I'd have missed the whole thing. It's by the grace of God that I stand here today. It really is. A couple of weeks ago, Cindy and I got the great honor of going down to Des Moines, and my daughter is there, which, by the way, I'll have to tell another story. And just bring, you guys are probably cooking by now. If I can stand the heat, so can you. Becky was acting weird. She's my daughter, and she was, 14 at the time, and she's just, you know, Becky's acting weird. Cindy, oh, no, she's not. She's just a man. No, Becky's acting weird. I mean, like, you know, weird. No. Being a good element, no. And so several months go by, and one night we come home, and we'd gone to original service seminar, you know, Mr. and Mrs. AA with the small child, and Mr. Happy AA, you know, it's, oh, geez. And so we got home, and been home for about 20-30 minutes, and opened up the door because the doorbell had rang. This long-haired, maggot-infested hippie type was sitting there. Hey, man, is your daughter home? You know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, man. You know, out of here, buddy. And so I went upstairs to ask my young daughter, who the heck does she know that's going to be bouncing around this house at that time of night? And she was asleep in the bed. So, you know, I went over to wake her up. And when I went over to wake her up, there was no Becky. There was just pillows, you know. And we live in a two-story house, and she's upstairs, and I'm by the stairs all that time. And so I can't figure out how she got out. She escaped somehow, you know. And so I end up, she got this chain ladder that she went down, you know. And she'd been doing this for quite some time because I knew she was, because I kept telling, how do they destroy these windows? Oh, they're just cheap windows. No, look at what's happening to these windows. They're just cheap windows. Quick, you're always picking on them, you know. So anyway, Becky comes home I locked all the doors, and we sat and we waited, and a couple hours later, Becky comes stumbling in. I mean, she's just 4 sheets to the wind, and I told her to go to bed. We called our sponsors, and, you know, here's the deal. Jim says, well, I'm going to be down there in a couple of days. He says, I want to talk to her. So anyway, we was putting on our anniversary meeting, our first Saturday in Billings, and Jim went downstairs and talked with Becky, and he comes back up and says, you take that girl to AA. I said, she's only 14. Heck, I've spilt more than she'll ever drink, you know. He says, you take that girl to AA. And so she's got 13 years now because of Jim. And so this last weekend, three weekends, I guess, and she introduced her dad. She gave me this, a lot better than yours, I'll have to admit. Yeah. She gave me this introduction that just tore me up. I mean, just tore me up, and I couldn't even, I was, I don't know, it's hard for you to believe it, I couldn't talk. You know, I hate them guys that can cry and just, you know, I just bawl and I stop. But anyway, she made this introduction, and how proud she was of her dad and the difference that I made in her life and stuff. And it's like, you know, sometimes you feel like you haven't done a good job, because Cindy and I have done a lot of AA. We've done a lot of AA. And a lot of nights we felt like we should have been home, and we wasn't home. We was with you. But because we was with you, whenever it came time for her to do what she needed to do to get sober, she had a place to go, and she knew you people really well. I mean, she knew who you was. And so because of that, and because we had years before made a group that was safe for newcomers to come in, which is a little problem that I have from time to time. She's able to stay sober, and she's been sober all this time. Married to a nice young man who's got her by a couple of 5 years, I guess, 4 or 5 years. And just a blessing. I mean, just another big-time blessing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she did such a good job right whenever I went to get on the stage, and me and her always cutting up. Instead of giving her a hug or shaking her hand, I just handed her a 20 and walked right past her, you know. She just took it and walked right on, you know. And it was funny. It's just one of those things that just happened. But, you know, what a gift. What a gift. I told you a little bit. I'm going to end with this. I told you guys a little bit about my home group whenever I sobered up. And I got to tell you a little bit about my home group today. We got people in our home group today, like Bob the Bomber. And one of the gals that you sponsor, Trudy O, used to be Trudy O's. Trudy was just as crazy as they come. She'd been in and out of the psych ward and the insane asylums, and they'd taken her kids and all this kind of stuff. Trudy used to she'd call me every Sunday morning without fail. I'm gonna kill myself. I'm gonna kill myself. I hate you. Hate God. I hate AA. I'm gonna kill myself. I got the knife out now. It's out of my purse. And I'm gonna cut my wrist. And I talked to her, you know. And this went on for months, you know. And one day that was on Sundays. But one day she called me on Monday. Now I'm working on Monday. She calls me on Monday, and I says, Trudy, I am so sick and tired of this crap. Get rid of the knife. Buy a gun. Put it in your mouth. Pull the stinking trigger. I'll talk to you later. Goodbye. I hung up. And I walked in the bedroom and I told Cindy, I've killed Trudy, I've killed Trudy. But Trudy's still alive. She has a wonderful sponsor. And if she ever calls up one commits suicide, just send her to me. She's a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Had a guy in there called Half Bubble Mike. Because he's a half bubble off, too. And Half Bubble Mike come in there, and he couldn't even make a complete sentence. And he had this car and this coat, and I think there's more oil on his coat than there was in the car. And it would be a hot day like this, and he'd have this oily, greasy coat on, and he would not give it up. He would not give it up. And, I mean, we tried every way in the world to get rid of that damn coat. Finally, one day, Trudy tricked him and got his coat and burned it. So, but he's still sober, and he's had a job for quite a while, and he's able to make fairly decent conversation now. You know, and guys who lived in abandoned cars, and people from broken marriages, and people with all kinds of trouble that they knew that they could never get past, find themselves in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, now sponsoring several people. And our little group has grown. Their fellowship has grown up among us. And it's funny. I was thinking about this morning. It sounds to me like little Millie was right. Look at all the miracles. Because I see all kinds of miracles today. See, I can see now. I couldn't see before. They were there. I just couldn't see them. And it sounds to me like Margaret was right. Them that keep coming to me and stay sober, and them that don't. Thanks.